Entrepreneurship is often framed as the domain of driven, venturesome individuals, tech startups, and economic disruption. The entrepreneur is a man or woman alone. But dig a little deeper, and you find something much more complex and more important. Entrepreneurship is about the spotting of opportunities, responding to societal and human challenges that are not being met, and creating change. And that makes it deeply social. What kind of environments help innovation thrive? What makes a good entrepreneur? And how do social qualities like networks, identity, trust, and inequality shape who gets to take risks and succeeds, and those who fare less well? To explore these questions, we're joined by Professor Eleanor Shaw, OBE, a leading academic in entrepreneurship and innovation, and currently Associate Principal for Entrepreneurship at the University of Strathclyde. Eleanor has spent her career championing the role of societal qualities in driving inclusive enterprise, particularly the role of women, minority ethnic groups, and underrepresented communities in shaping the future of business. Eleanor, brilliant to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Will. I'm delighted to be here today.
Now, entrepreneurship, but before we get into that, a question I ask all our interviewees, the We Society, when we rang you and said, would you do a turn, what was your first thought?
I was honoured, actually. My first thought was, wow, okay, that's great. They're interested not only in the broad subject of social sciences, but also the social impact and importance of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship and social impact are two things that are not often put together.
It's interesting, this question, because actually Britain is a surprisingly entrepreneurial country. Scotland, England, Wales, Northern Ireland alike. I mean, we have a record number of startups and spin-outs from universities. And all the men and women I've encountered in my work are all very mission-driven. They really want to make the world better, either with the technology they've got or because they think that they can improve society in some way. So it didn't surprise me that you kind of have found this rather inspiring area to get into.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever spoken with or worked with or undertaken research with an entrepreneur who's really not driven by a keen sense of purpose. And also, you know, really draws upon their personal values to help them take decisions about what type of business they want to run and equally importantly, how they want to run that business.
Whenever I come across a founder and my line of work, along with the Academy of Social Sciences, I also co-chair a little business think tank called The Purposeful Company. Whenever I encounter these founders, these founder entrepreneurs, I'm always kind of absolutely with you. They were really purpose-driven, really purpose-driven. And actually, that from that, you know, lots of good things arise. And yet there's a kind of culture in which entrepreneurship is seen to be kind of all about fostering a culture of deregulation, tax cuts, kind of let these tall poppies grow. All they want to do is to cut down the small poppies. But that's not the culture I encounter.
Yeah, I find it really curious because I agree with you. There's a dominant narrative that paints entrepreneurs as heroic individuals and actually quite individualistic. And all the things that you're saying, you know, not keen on regulation, keen only to go for their beachhead market, for example. I just think this is nonsense, that this is just a popular, easy to write about way of discussing entrepreneurs. But actually, anyone who spends any amount of time with an entrepreneur finds out almost immediately that this is just not the case whatsoever. You know, entrepreneurship is tough. People don't enter into entrepreneurship unless they've spotted an opportunity, unless they've spotted a challenge that they believe that they can address, and the economic, social, community benefits of entrepreneurship, you know, are huge and they're multiple, and it would be great if we could challenge that dominant narrative, because it's almost lazy to characterise them in that sort of a way.
So agree with you. I mean, this is something which I was very struck in reading about how you approach this, that you, I mean, to spot a business opportunity that your technology or your the capacities that you're going to put together in your company can help assuage and get recurrent orders from, means you've got to have a very, very good feel for what's going on in society, what people want, what their challenges are, how you can improve their lives. It's not about someone kind of having a kind of light bulb moment in a garage and as an individual, you know, then going out to make squillions of money. You know, what they are about is about much more subtle. And I think your work brings that out really well.
Lots of entrepreneurs are driven by the fact, for example, that they are able to combine something that they've identified that can be solved with the opportunity to give other people a job. I mean, that's a fantastic thing to actually be able to do.
Yep.
To be able to give people, you know, the opportunity to make a decent income, to put their talents to use. This is a dominant theme that all the entrepreneurs, and I've worked with entrepreneurs for more than 25, almost 30 years now, and the ability to build something that gives other people the opportunity to make a living is also something that entrepreneurs are really passionate about.
Rather than kind of talk abstractions now, I mean, just give us some examples of, you know, firms or individuals that have really done entrepreneurial stuff that kind of sticks with you.
Okay, so I mean, I can name all sorts of people. So let me start with someone that everybody will most likely know, and that is Sir Tom Hunter. I was director of the Hunter Centre for Entrepreneurship for about 6 years. And I got to know Tom really well.
For those who don't know Tom, it would just be helpful to give, you know, what the company's name was and what the products are. And
Okay. Yeah. So Tom started off, Tom's really interesting. So he started off his company selling training shoes, and he went on to buy over a number of other well-known sports retailers, let's say. But what he then did, and he was really inspired by the writings of Carnegie. And so he set up his foundation. And that is actually where he spent most of his latter years, focusing on how he can use the work of his foundation as a power for social good. And in doing that, what he also does is he supports many other entrepreneurs at early stages in their journey, and also when they're growing their companies. So he's really, certainly within Scotland, within the UK, he's had quite a fundamental impact on the entrepreneurial landscape. And one of the things that Tom said to me again and again was, Eleanor, the best form of social security that I can offer anyone is a job. Now, Tom himself grew up in Cumnock, which is a very remote and excluded part of Scotland. He went to Strathclyde University, and the rest is history. You know, he started from selling training shoes out the back of a van to running a multi-million pound company. And he took great pride in the ability to provide hundreds of thousands of people with a job. So, you know, so that's someone who was doing it at very, very large scale.
And would he say, would you say that entrepreneurship is something that can be learnt, or does it come from inside you? I mean, can you acquire entrepreneurial skills?
I think some people are born, if you think about sports people, okay, some people are just born to be fantastic. Andy Murray, born to be a brilliant tennis player. Or let's say he was born to be a really great tennis player, but through coaching, he became an absolute legend, fantastic at what he does. I think entrepreneurship is similar. It's not the same. It's similar to that. And I genuinely believe that when faced with the correct environment, the opportunity to be creative, to be innovative, to be entrepreneurial lies within all of us. The challenge that we have is, actually, our education system is one of the challenges, because we're so focused in education, in teaching people how to pass exams. And unfortunately, being innovative and creative in how you pass an exam might not be the best approach to get the highest marks possible. So I think we need to be doing much more earlier in our education to to just allow that creativity, that fun, actually the fun that people have from being creative, to nurture that rather than distract from it and put such a strong focus on the ability to pass exams with really high grades.
And what you seem to be suggesting is that, you know, entrepreneurship requires a different kind of space. It's not something that you can kind of take questions and write down answers to. It's more of a kind of cultural predisposition, and it's available to all of us, but I'm not sure it can be taught, can it?
No, I think it's much more experiential than anything. I think it's about, as you say, creating spaces and giving people the opportunity, perhaps, you know, to work with others on an exciting problem, and to explore what can they bring to that problem, how can they solve, you know, what are their problem solving skills like. Something that a lot of educationalists will be familiar with is the growth mindset, and what all the research shows us is that entrepreneurs have a fabulous growth mindset. What does that mean? That means that they are always learning. There's so many analogies I could say here. So, you know, you can't bake a cake without breaking eggs. A baby doesn't just stand up and walk. It's got to fall down a couple of times and realise what that means. And entrepreneurship's like that. It's not plain sailing. And I'm really worried and cautious about using the word failure, because there's a real fear of failure in the UK. And actually, we need to turn that on its head. And I think this is what entrepreneurs do. They don't recognise failure. They see when things go wrong, there's an opportunity for them to learn from that, so that when they approach the same situation next time, they'll do it in a slightly different way, informed by the learning they've got. And that's very much a growth mindset. And I think there's opportunities across the whole of education and elsewhere, you know, at a societal level as well, for us to be a little bit gentler with ourselves and give ourselves the space to learn from situations when they perhaps don't turn out as we had initially thought they would.
It is serial entrepreneurs that actually are the ones that are the best at back, because they're the ones who've, some of whom have had successes and some of who've had failures, but they're the best at back because actually they're streetwise. Mm-hmm. And it's a curious kind of... It's true of the private markets, and it's very true of the public markets. I mean, you know, civil servants are kind of completely frozen into immobility for fear that if they give XYZ company a grant, it might fail. Oh my God, what about that? But actually, actually, if the state isn't losing a bit of money occasionally, it's not doing the right thing. It's not being risky enough.
Entrepreneurship is risky, but here's the interesting thing: most of the entrepreneurs that I know take calculated risks. You know, they're not out just to use other people's money to, you know, to gamble with it against something that they've not actually thought about. Most entrepreneurs that I'm aware of, up until the point where they are looking for investment in their company, they've done a lot of work. They've done a lot of research. They've spoken to lots of people. And actually, it could be a much less risky investment than some of the ways in which public and private monies are invested.
If you're enjoying our show, you might also enjoy our promotional partners at Inside Briefing, the podcast brought to you by the Institute for Government, the UK's leading impartial think tank dedicated to making government work better. What does Keir Starmer's plan to rewire the state really mean? Can Rachel Reeves balance the books while fixing public services? Could Nigel Farage's Reform Party disrupt devolution? And how will the government handle Donald Trump's unpredictable moves? Hosted by the Institute for Government's director, Hannah White, Inside Briefing brings you expert analysis from the Institute's team, top political journalists and insiders who break down what's happening behind the scenes and share the decisions we made in the corridors of power in Westminster, Whitehall and beyond. So if you want to know how the government really works and why it sometimes doesn't, Inside Briefing is your essential listen. Find it now on Spotify, Apple, and all major platforms. This running theme in your work is this notion, and it's already come out in this conversation, that actually entrepreneurship is a social activity about social networks, being sensitive to trends in society, spotting what people really, really want. And you don't get to that place without being a social animal. And that then leads you into the way entrepreneurship can work, not just, you know, in the private markets, kind of trying to make money and all the rest, but actually in social entrepreneurship. I mean, the same kind of rules apply. And you're as enthusiastic and as passionate about that as about private entrepreneurship.
Yeah, absolutely. I might even go further than that.
Really?
I might do. I would say, at least historically, okay, at least historically, I think social entrepreneurs, wow, have to be super passionate, super motivated, have a razor sharp focus on what it is they want to do something about, because there's a historical conundrum between being an entrepreneur and creating economic value, and then adding into that mix economic value and social value. And what social entrepreneurs are really fantastic at is creating economic value, social value, community value, possibly also nowadays lots of environmental value as well. And I think that you know, I think social entrepreneurs have to be quite ambidextrous, because they need to make money, they need to bring in the cash to pay for everything they want to do, whilst at the same time addressing often really, really challenging social problems. As far as I'm concerned, social entrepreneurs, what they do is amazing, because they provide people with jobs, they make money, and at the same time, they are addressing a social problem. You know, they tick so many boxes.
Again, can you make that real for us? Is there a social entrepreneur, or a him or a her, who you really rate?
So I'm going to mention here a colleague and now a friend of mine, Susan Actimel. Susan is a serial social entrepreneur. Susan's first business was called Impact Arts, and she set up an arts organisation to provide jobs, employment and creative opportunities in a very deprived area of Glasgow. Now, she set that up over 20 years ago. It's still thriving. Since then, Susan has gone on to set up an organisation called Homes for Good. Homes for Good is now the UK's largest social letting agency. So what Susan's business does is provide opportunities for people to access, through rental, social housing for people that other letting agencies just wouldn't touch. Okay, that's the best way I can describe it. There's two parts to her business. One part is buying over and renovating properties, creating beautiful living spaces. And then the other is renting those living spaces out to individuals and families who would typically find it really difficult to have an estate agent rent that sort of property out to them. I mean, and that's fantastic, because as soon as someone has a nice place to live, that can absolutely change their lives.
Absolutely. Now tell me, I mean, you've got, you know, the social entrepreneur and a commercial entrepreneur, two very good examples. Why do we get more of it? And how can we support more of it?
Here's how I think there's two bits to this. I think one is we need to create greater opportunities into entrepreneurship. Okay, so we have more male-led businesses than female-led businesses. We have more female-led businesses than minority-led businesses. And I could go on and on about the demographics. So at a societal level, we need to change the dial somehow, change the cultural phenomenon to make it really readily available and acceptable that anyone with a really great idea that spots an opportunity can become an entrepreneur. But creating equal access to opportunity isn't enough. The other part, and this is something I've given a lot of thought to in more recent years, creating opportunity is all well and good. But if we don't support that also with creating equal access to the resources needed to respond to those opportunities, then we're never going to shift the dial. So it's both sides. If you know, those are two sides of a coin. One, creating more equal access to opportunity, and two, creating more equal access to the resources needed to act upon that opportunity. And both are required.
Work I've been doing has shown that actually, interestingly enough, venture capitalists who have daughters tend to be more successful investors than ones that only have sons. So kind of it's quite interesting. And then you often get venture capitalists teaming up with their daughters, and actually the
fascinating.
It's a very kind of dynamic that the success rate is higher, and that speaks to the importance of actually diverse, profoundly diverse views. And in actually coming to an accurate assessment of what's going on around you.
I completely agree. And, you know, we're recognising in other areas, let's say, of business and industry, that diverse teams drive really good decision making. They drive resilience. They drive sustainability. So the more we can get diversity present within boardrooms, the better those large organisations will be. And the exact same applies for entrepreneurship. The more we can have diversity in our entrepreneurial population, the more our entrepreneurial population will thrive, will grow, will provide more jobs, and will address the purpose for which those entrepreneurial organisations have been set up.
So I'm going to push you a bit, actually. Part of the point of social science is not just to kind of analyse and interpret and identify kind of deep trends in society and their connections, but also to try and answer the question of how can this be made better and produce better outcomes. So let me put that question to you.
One of the things that we need to do is have more obvious celebration of successful entrepreneurship when we meet it. And I don't think we actually do that as much as we might do. Related to that, we need to also celebrate examples of more diverse entrepreneurial communities. And again, I don't think we do that as well as we should do. So there's something around role models. There's something about, you know, holding up a mirror that reflects back to people, you know, what they see. So our media could help a lot there, and what we talk about in our media outlets. But there's other things as well. So, for example, finance, we know, poses huge challenges for some entrepreneurs, but very, very little challenge for others. And I'm talking particularly here about probably if we take women, female leaders as an example, but I suspect the same would apply for minority leaders as well. The current structures and systems and societies and approach to investment make it difficult for even the most promising, high potential entrepreneurial ventures.
You're in a position to advance the cause. I mean, give us a sense of actually the day-to-day life of Professor Eleanor Shaw as she goes about okay. her business, advancing the cause of entrepreneurship.
I'm now at the University of Strathclyde, where I'm an associate principal and professor of entrepreneurship. I've done a number of things. So I'm involved with something called the Gender Index, which is a UK... call it a think tank. It's what the Gender Index is trying to do is provide more and better data to allow us to evidence what role women currently play in entrepreneurship, and also if they receive the same support like for like as their male counterparts, what would be different? So I'm very involved in that. I did work at the time of the Rose Review when Alison Rose was chief exec of NatWest, and Alison commissioned a fantastic piece of work called the Rose Review. And what that work showed was that if women received the same funding like for like as men, there would be an additional whopping $250 billion a year added to the UK economy. So as this won't surprise you, Will, but as a social scientist, evidence. I really want us to have the evidence to be able to encourage policymakers, investors, other supporters of entrepreneurs to change the type of decisions that they take. Because in this particular example, the fact that women-led businesses receive less funding than their male counterparts is not a women's problem. This is a business problem, because we are, by not fueling female-led businesses with the same capital as male-led businesses, we are letting the UK economy down. So I do work with the Scale Up Institute. I do work with the Gender Index. I do a lot of work with the Scottish Government through an organisation called Pathways Forward, which recently undertook an independent review of women's entrepreneurship in Scotland. And I'm also connected in with some international networks, the Diana Network, which was started in Babson, just outside of Boston. And that's a lifelong piece of work that many of us have been doing to try to gather the evidence, because without the evidence, it's really difficult to convince and provide compelling business reasons as to why things need to change.
We'll all pound your elbow. I mean, I'm a great advocate of founders, founder companies, the need for more growth companies. You can't have economic growth without growth companies, and the whole kind of ecosystem of support that you need, engage venture capital, the whole damn thing. I mean, it's really, and actually, it's not that expensive to do, actually. It's much cheaper in a way than some of the kind of, fiscal boosts that people talk about to get growth going of 1-3% of GDP. I mean, you can do this with single billions, not tens of billions.
Absolutely. And I cited figures there about, if we treated women equally, if we treat ethnic minority-led businesses equally, the figures are even higher. They're staggering. So, by investing in those diverse entrepreneurial communities, that's good for business. It's good for the UK economy. So to me, the evidence is there, the business case is there. Let's just get on and do it. There's only positive gains can come from creating those equal opportunities and providing equal access to those resources to take advantage of those entrepreneurial opportunities.
Is there any reason, any kind of life event, any kind of thing that explains your passion for this?
In my very early school years, when I was working, and Saturdays or during the holidays, I was employed by small companies. So I was able to supplement my income by working for small companies, and they taught me so much about business, and actually they taught me so much about how to care for your employees and how to care for people. So I think maybe I've never thought about it before. But that's maybe where it's come from.
The young woman who...
the young woman
Saturday
who
jobs
worked for... Saturday... My first job, I can't believe I'm actually saying this out loud, I worked for a farm in Ayrshire where I grew up, and I had a job on Fridays and Saturdays where I got on my bike and I had over one handlebar bacon and over the other cream and eggs, something like that. And I would cycle round to people's houses and deliver this. And this was just a small local farm. But it was great because I got some money from doing it, and I got to speak with so many people when I did those deliveries. Starting from that, then as a student, every job I had was working for a local entrepreneurial firm. So maybe that's where it's come from.
Well, Professor Shaw, it's great to have had this turbo boosting to the cause of entrepreneurship. I'm afraid I'm a fully paid up convert to this. As it must have been obvious from my questions, I think that the more this we can get, the more we can support these people, and they're good people. That's the point, which I think is often
absolutely
the trouble. And I think your point at the very beginning of our exchange is when you made the point about the dominant narrative being about this attempt to define entrepreneurs as kind of heroic red and blunt tooth and claw capitalists, devil take the hindmost. That's not who they are.
Not at all.
They're much more complicated people, much more interesting people. And actually, the necessary for insufficient condition for a good economy and society is having a critical mass of people like that who innovate kind of in science, innovate in technology, innovate in society. And, you've made the case very, very well. So, thank you very much indeed. And good luck with your work.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. The We Society is brought to you by the Academy of Social Sciences in association with the Nuffield Foundation and Leverhulme Trust. I'm Will Hutton, the producer is Emily Finch, and it's a Whistledown production. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, share with your colleagues and friends. And thank you so much for listening.